Hello and welcome to episode 55 of Speak Beastie for February 11th,
2018. I'm Megan.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Oreo.
And I'm Eleanor.
Woo-hoo!
Yay! Woo-hoo!
So how about that Fantastic Beasts trailer?
Yeah, I so feel like we should say that at the time that we are recording, there is no trailer, just in case that
yes. It's
probably going to be dropped in like
a
day.
There's a rumor there's going to be a trailer today on Tuesday when we are recording.
Just checking. No, nothing yet, but just checking.
Yes, someone just check periodically throughout the show. Every 10 minutes, we should all look on Twitter.
Just to make sure there's no trailer yet.
My bloody internet is like seeing this in Danish, and I can't tell which thing means news. Oh, anyway, whatever.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you! Yes you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt's commander? Famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint. Just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
And now for the Phoenix Register.
Oh, Ariel's here.
Oh, I miss her. So, first up in the Phoenix Register, I didn't write this. Ariel did actually put all of this in here, so I think. So I'm just guessing. I mean, I did read it. So Eddie Redmayne now has his own wax figure at Madame Tussauds
Yay. In
London.
Question.
Yeah. I didn't expect that one.
I want to know, like, do you know what weight it is?
Like, what weight?
Well, yeah.
I don't.
Because you know how, like, he got really, really skinny for the Danish girl. And I was just kind of like, I wonder when they got the model of him. And if
they,
a normal in, or not.
They said in 2017, they took all his measurements. He came in. They took over 200 measurements.
But I don't know that wax figures are proportionately, like, weighted to their live counterparts.
Do you think, I mean, do you reckon they, like, did the whole thing? You know how in Ollivander, like, measures between Harry's nostrils in, like, in Sorcerer's mm-hmm. Stone? I wonder if they did that. I hope they did. That would make me so happy.
That would be so funny.
That they make, like, plaster casts or something that,
like,
they use?
I guess they would. But then, wait, it says measurements, so maybe not.
Yeah, it does say measurements, so I don't know. Well, he donated his suit, his Gucci suit, from the premiere of The Danish Girl.
Oh, okay. Oh, so he is
that's
really
probably
skinny.
Perfectly tailored to him. So
he would have been really skinny.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's good to know, guys. If you see Madame Tussauds, that's what it is. It's a skinny Eddie Redmayne.
It's skinny Eddie.
Very important distinction.
Hey,
yeah.
I
now
care.
That we figured that out. So we may not have a trailer while we're recording this, but there was footage from Crimes of Grindelwald at the celebration of Harry Potter here in Orlando.
Well, and by footage, we mean like 1 second clips that.
Yeah. So
could very well be from the first film.
They played this thing at Celebration. I was at Celebration, but I wasn't at this panel. I was there for a day, and I only went to the talent panel, and then I rode Spider-Man.
That's
but
good use of time, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, when I met Spider-Man too, he was very nice. So welcome to the Spider-Man fan cast, hosted by me. So WB hasn't like officially released this video, but people filmed it. MuggleNet filmed it. It's like a minute and a half, and most of it is just that fluff where it's like interviews with people where they're like, oh, this is just such an amazing world that J.K. Rowling has built, and we're all so honored to be a part of it. And they do that for about a minute and 15 seconds. And it shows all of the like promo images we've already seen. And then at the very end, it's all like behind the scenes footage. It's not like, because you can see cameras and stuff. So you see like Newt, I think, coming out of the case. You see Tina in like a crowd of people shouting, and she's looking through some bars.
Right.
It looks kind of like a fight's happening or something. Like, it looks like a cell, but I imagine that on the other side of the bars is some sort of fight. And then you see Queenie just looking beautiful, and you see Jacob smiling, and you see Grindelwald, and then you see Dumbledore on a kind of platform thing, waving his wand. Well, waving a wand, I can't tell what wand.
Oh.
And Newt is walking up behind him. So you get a glimpse of every character. The Dumbledore one the Dumbledore one and the Tina ones are the only ones that were like kind of interesting to me. Everything else was just like, hey, look at this character. You love him.
Or not.
Which is nice, but
well, or not, yeah.
I'm gonna need more at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I said on the last episode that if we didn't have a trailer by the time the episode dropped, I was gonna drive to Warner Brothers.
We got lost.
Yeah. We're still on the way there, but
yeah,
if we don't have a trailer.
I'm to Birmingham this weekend, so I'm close.
There you go. But if we don't have a trailer by the time this episode drops, I'm going to have to come up with another threatening type of thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Send them a letter, a strongly worded letter.
Strongly worded.
Full of anthrax.
Definitely tweet at them.
Just kidding. I won't send them anthrax.
You gotta cut that out.
That's like 0 to 100 real quick there.
Yeah, that escalated quickly. I have no intentions to harm anyone with anthrax.
Megan's
but I will send them a letter. A plain old letter.
I don't even know what that is. Should I know?
It's a very, very deadly disease, and that's all you need.
People, okay. Like, a few years ago were putting it in envelopes and mailing it to other people, and it was, like, a whole
I don't know about a few years ago. Many years ago.
quite a while back.
But, yeah, not a good thing.
I'm just going to note down for myself, don't offend Megan ever.
Yeah, and you shouldn't threaten to send it to film executives. That's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the plague. It's that kind of level. Just to make it clear.
I just really want a trailer.
Me too. Man, guys, did you see the Solo trailer yesterday? That movie's coming out soon, and they just released the trailer. Imagine if they did that with Fantastic Beasts.
I would have to continually come up with new ways to threaten WB every 2 weeks from now until November.
Yeah.
That would be really hard.
That could
we'll
be
just
fun,
be like,
though.
And now to the Megan Threatens WB corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
What disease
this
will
week?
She send them today? Tuberculosis?
And Michael could do a recorded announcement for them, Megan.
Yeah, there we go.
So, this is happening. Should we get back to news?
I was going to be the insane one on this. No.
We are all the insane one.
Yeah, there are very few sane hosts left, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
It's just because we're deprived of a trailer. So we're slowly going insane.
That is why.
Hey, I'm on new medication today. Anything could happen.
Oh, boy.
Nice. So anyway, in the news.
Oh my god.
This little thing happened, guys. I don't know if you heard about it, but David Yates spoke. Yeah. David Yates opened his mouth yet again.
He should just stop doing that.
Don't you love it when David does that?
Stop.
David Yates, if you haven't heard, said in an article on Entertainment Weekly that it said when asked if Dumbledore would be gay in Crimes of Grindelwald, he said, quote, not explicitly. Which I am thinking now, I need that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Just not explicitly.
Yes.
In some, like, fancy font.
Yeah.
And I'll wear it.
Could it be, like, rainbow colors?
Crimes of Grindelwald. Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Definitely.
That's going in the merch, the Speak Beastie merch store.
Yeah, you know, the Speak Beastie merch store.
We're doing so many new things on this episode already. It's like... new section, new merch. By the end of this podcast, we have an episode, it's like 20 things that we have to do.
I know, we keep giving ourselves homework.
So yeah, David Yates said that, and it has caused a little bit of a hullabaloo that we will talk about in the main discussion, but we also did a Google Hangouts all about it with all of your favorite resident gays.
And Megan.
And Haley.
Not me. So can I just say,
and not
I am a favorite.
So not all of your favorites, I'm sorry.
Most of them.
And also Megan's friend Craig.
Yes.
Who may or may not be your favorite. but he's not resident to this podcast, so. And we talked about it for like 2 hours.
Yeah, give or take.
It was an hour and a half, the final
That's
thing.
It. We did pretty well.
Yeah, it was like, but still, I expected it to be like an hour, and like, it was in the middle of the night for me, so I woke up the next morning, and I was like, so breakfast, I'm going to watch this hangout thing on YouTube. And I was like, whoa, an hour and a half?
You sweet summer child. It's like, yeah. I remember,
I would have expected us to go on.
Speak Beastie with like aerials, like 4 hours, just. But also, it was like 3 a.m. our time.
Yeah, it was 2 a.m.
You're but insane! Yeah, I was like, I'm going to sleep. I care about this, but not that much.
Yeah. There were a couple of our listeners that stayed up to watch it. Our European listeners, and I was very impressed with them.
I had an 8 a.m. lecture. It was not going to happen.
That is completely fair.
Yeah. Listeners who did not watch it should definitely go watch. I mean, you don't even need to watch it. You can just have it in the background and listen to it like any episode.
Yeah, unless you want to stare at our faces forever.
Which
is
fun.
I mean.
Who wouldn't want to do that, you beautiful people?
Especially when Haley came in and Haley just freaks out.
Yeah.
Haley just can't sit still.
She's just like a colorful blur most of the time.
And she really can't sit still. Like, I was in a car with her to a mall, and I was kind of freaking out at some point. So she's like, can you, like, look at the road and stop looking around? Sorry, Haley, I love you.
But, yeah, because we're gonna talk about this whole not explicitly stuff a little bit in main discussion, but in a different way. So, yeah, you should really go listen to the Hangouts, listeners.
We got real into it. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And David Yates sucks. Just if that's just my summary, if, you know, you don't listen to it, but you should.
Well, the summary is that we don't really know what explicit means, and we haven't seen the movie yet, so giant rainbow-colored question mark for now. But there's a lot of conversation that's really interesting and fun, so.
Yeah, a lot of hope, a lot of pessimism.
Do I see elves coming in?
Oh, yes. Ooh. There they come. They're
Hedwig,
not fascist owls this week. They're just regular owls.
Owl.
Yeah.
Owl. I see what you did there.
So, we have actually a handful of owl posts this week, which is very exciting. Diskid writes, to be honest, since the movie...
Diskid!
Yes!
Diskid and not that kid, as Micah used to say on Audio Homora. He didn't get tired of that joke.
So he says, or she says, to be honest, since the movie takes place outside of Hogwarts, the thought never even occurred to me that Hogwarts would play much of a role at all. I can see the possibilities, though. I can also see flashbacks of Newt when he was at Hogwarts, considering where they ended Fantastic Beasts with mentioning Leta Lestrange. They certainly have more movies to bring up the story between her and Newt, but if they completely left it out of this next movie, that would be a real ripoff and hardly worth mentioning her at the end of the first movie at all. So that's in reference to our main discussion from the last episode where we talked about what role Hogwarts would play in the film. And yeah, I agree.
We know that they cast young actors, so it's probably like 90% sure that we're going to see flashbacks from Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Disc Kid brings up a good point of like, why would they set it up with Leta Lestrange if they weren't planning on taking us back at least a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you wouldn't like set that up and then be like, well, we'll tell you in 4 movies.
Or would you?
Wow. And no one will remember.
Who knows? It's not explicit.
I don't know. I mean, the whole, you know, Hogwarts will always be there to welcome you home. I feel like Hogwarts it'll show up. She'll be into that.
Okay. We also have a message from Catherine about the Dumbledore Grindelwald is Chekhov's gun, or how I would handle this in terms of dramatic structure. So she says, hello, Speak Beastie team. I've been thinking a lot recently about the controversy over Dumbledore's sexuality not being made explicit in the next film. Of course, absolutely 100% it needs to be unambiguous by the end of the series, but I'm okay with it not happening in film 2 for 3 reasons, 2 minor and 1 big. Firstly, if he's not in it much, the omission may just be a matter of not enough time. If he has a more prominent role later, it makes more sense to include it then. Secondly, if I were Dumbledore at this point in the story, I would absolutely be burying my past and hoping no one finds out the genocidal maniac was my ex, so he may be hiding it from the audience and the other characters. Which leads up to point 3, dramatic structure. Chekhov's gun roughly states that a gun introduced in Act 1 must go off in Act 3, or in our case, a character trait hinted at in Film 2 must have a payoff in Film 4 or 5. Set aside what we as fans know, the other characters and the casual viewer don't have that information. But Dumbledore's sexuality isn't and should not be the gun, it's just who he is. But the relationship reveal should be. It's the loaded gun left casually on stage. It's hinted at, there in the background, quietly informing every decision Dumbledore makes, but never explained until the moment it is taken down and used. You want that moment to come with the maximum amount of dramatic weight, so I'd stick it right before he agrees to go to the fight where he defeats Grindelwald. Suddenly it all makes sense, why he avoided the fight, why he tapped Newt, why he's been covering his tracks, and generally been cagey. He didn't want to admit the relationship, and he didn't want to fight his ex. It's a pretty solid plot strategy.
I know that's not the point, but I'm now seeing Dumbledore taking a gun to the final duel.
I like that plan, but also they say ex, and it's like, no, she said explicitly it was unrequited. So does that even, yeah. Like, that doesn't count as an ex.
But I think the point still stands, though. Like, he doesn't want anyone to know that they were friends.
Especially, he doesn't want anyone to know that they had plans to rule the world together.
Right.
That's really not what he wants to be, like, people to know. Because he's like, whole... at that point, people are still like, you should be the Ministry for Magic. Like, I mean, they're still doing that when Harry's time is, so.
And the whole, like, Dumbledore being gay and once having feelings for him kind of adds a whole layer to that plot line.
Yeah.
I really want that to be the case. Like, I really do. Because I always had this idea that, like, with the Elder Wand being the most powerful magical instrument really existing, I was always hoping that there would be some kind of, with Dumbledore, the way he would win against Voldemort would be, sorry, talk about Freudian slip, against Grindelwald would be, like, through some sort of emotional blackmail or manipulation of a time when there was something between them. But, like, I just, considering that J.K. Rowling isn't addressing what David Yates said, and there's no sort of confirmation that something is going to at least be confirmed when it comes to, you know, LGBTQI A+. I am very pessimistic about it. I have a good, like, I especially the way they handled Voldemort's, I guess, death, although he just kind of shattered into thin air. Like, I don't know, I'm very pessimistic about it. I'm not at all confident that this kind of, I don't know, I think it's like a really strong, really deep plot line, but I just have no, I just am very, very, like, not confident that that's going to eventuate.
Well, my thing with this is, like, we already know this. Like, not every fan, well, not every person who sees all the Fantastic Beasts movies knows that Dumbledore is gay and is in love with, well, was in love with Grindelwald. But, like, most people know. So a dramatic reveal isn't going to be that dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's which fair.
I don't know, that, like, yep, that gives me even less hope. Just like,
yeah,
that's even, I still less think, likely. Though, like, this could be a good, like, indicator of why it wouldn't be important now, but how they might use it later. Like, maybe not a dramatic reveal, yeah, but just adding a dynamic to that relationship, yeah, as it evolves.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think just even, like, because a lot of people are worrying about what does explicit mean, and, like, is explicit, I mean, some people seem to think that's going to be an entire flashback to their love lives or whatever, and it's like, no, explicit can be something as simple as Queenie being like, oh, you loved him, you know, yeah, and just seeing it in, mm-hmm, his thoughts. Mm-hmm. That's,
especially
that's
this, like, as there is no love life to show in a flashback.
Yeah.
Right.
It's, yeah, probably more like Dumbledore drooling over Grindelwald. And that's about it.
Writing in his notebook. Albus.
Yeah,
and
diary.
Oh my god, could you imagine, like, A, P, W, B, D, R, G, G. Poor Dumbledore. No one would ever mistake his initials for anyone else, ever.
He just writes Albus Grindelwald, like, several times in his notebook, practicing his future signature.
That's so
Albus
sad.
Albus Grindelwald!
Acting like he's a 12-year-old girl and not a 17-year-old boy.
That makes me sad.
He's okay now. Well, he's dead, but other than that,
they're both pretty dead. That's fine.
Yeah.
So we have one last note here from Evelyn. She says, "Hi, Speak Beasties. I've heard about your podcast on MuggleCast and have enjoyed the last couple of episodes. It was especially nice to hear about how the podcast itself started. I'm a rather late to the party Potter fan. I was aware of the series in my teens, but distanced myself from it because I thought it was rubbish, sad face. I never gave it a chance. I have watched the movies and enjoyed them, though. Fantastic Beasts film was what put Potter back in my mind. The day I watched it was just such a brilliant day. I was out for a bit of me time having a coffee and cake in a bakery, foreshadowing, lol.
Nice.
And decided to go watch the film. I loved it so much. A month later, I was finally reading Harry Potter, and now I'm so sad I didn't do it sooner. It was really nice to hear about one of the co-hosts' experience of joining MuggleNet and ultimately podcasting. It gave me hope that I can be an active part of the fandom, even if I miss growing up with the Harry Potter books. I would still love to contribute to the fandom in some way, and it's good to know it's still possible. Do you have any advice for later fans?"
Ooh.
That's such a nice note.
I know.
Yeah. Thanks for writing it, Evelyn.
The answer is just intern with MuggleNet if you want to write articles and stuff. And, you know, sometimes you can get cool stuff like press passes and things like that. And, you know, you can go and meet, you know, I mean, I think I met Evanna Lynch through MuggleNet, because I was on a press pass. So, you know, like, intern with us. That's the advice.
And I mean, honestly, like, if you, you know, want to donate to us on Patreon, you can join our common room. Or there's also, MuggleNet has the fandom chat on Facebook, and it's just a bunch of fans who talk to each other.
Yeah, that's fun.
I think it's just called Fandom Chat, hosted by MuggleNet. So. Yeah.
But also, if you're not into, like, the internet, I guess you can, you probably can find, like, a local Quidditch team. There's always stuff with, like, universities around, so you can do that. And there's usually, like, Harry Potter trivia around, or, like, sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you live in Germany.
No, I think Germany has Quidditch teams at their
Yeah, it does have Quidditch teams.
Well, there you go!
But not Trivia Nights.
My God, why don't
you
have trivia?
You should host the Harry Potter Trivia Night of Germany.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Of the whole of Germany.
All the whole country.
Absolutely. Don't be unambitious.
Were any of us on this podcast later fans?
No.
Like, maybe not as late, but... Okay, because I know Haley was. Haley didn't read the books until they all came out.
Yeah, but Haley's also super young, so...
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't read all the books until the first four were out.
That counts as late.
I guess.
Yeah, that's
I was also pretty young, so...
So late, Shannon.
Yeah. Shannon, what have you done?
Yeah. I
guess that was about when the first movie came out, so.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, first movie, fourth book were about the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My mom read them aloud to me because I was a baby. Aww. I mean, I could read, but I didn't want to.
I know we complain about like all the new content that we're getting and how some of it is like not what we want, but it is cool that it can kind of inform a whole new generation of fans and like get people involved that otherwise wouldn't have been. I think that's neat.
I also like that they're doing the, what is it called? Picture book?
The illustrated edition.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
I love those so much. Those are great things since the 7th.
And those are really getting new kids into Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. They're like
starting at 6 or 7 because people are reading to them and they can look at the illustrated scenes and stuff. And that's really helping to get another.
And Jim K is amazing. If you can check out his, like, I think he's got a YouTube channel where he like shows like some of the inspiration he gets. It's amazing. Anyway, I just do it because I've started converting my
read like Fantastic Beasts, the original textbook, and Quidditch Through the Ages and Tales of Beetle the Bard. You can read those; they're fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The illustrated of Fantastic Beasts is beautiful as well, and the Australian page is really cute. The Antipodean Opali page, which is basically the Australian page, well, it's like a weird Australian New Zealand like.
I was just gonna say the one is New Zealand. I'm gonna fight you on this.
No. You look at the page on the illustrated, and there's like kangaroos across the desert, and then these crazy mountains in the background, and you're like, that's nowhere in Australia and nowhere in New Zealand, so I feel like there's been a lot of creative license there, just bash them together.
That's what it looks like in the Wizarding World. Okay.
So there,
exactly.
So the Uluru has been transformed to Mount Cook. That works out.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it looks like.
Evelyn, I also would advise you to join me in screaming at WB until we get a trailer.
Oh yes, that's also fun.
Oh yes,
that's part of the fandom experience.
Have we checked recently? Everybody look at Twitter.
Like, I feel like if it were to drop, I would have got like 100 notifications on Facebook.
I would hope so.
I don't look at Facebook a lot.
Like, but
as evidenced by the fact I didn't hear this whole Dumbledore news until like almost 24 hours later. And I was like, what?
Shannon, who are you? What are your friends doing?
I know.
Doing?
I was at work. You know,
well, it's not good enough. Not good.
They haven't dropped the trailer.
You're fired.
Okay.
All right. Well, goodbye, owls. It's been real. We'll see you next time. Take care. Stay hydrated. All that good stuff.
Do owls have to stay hydrated?
Yeah.
So many questions.
You know, we joke, but like, this is a serious matter.
Yeah.
Everyone who's listening, like, when was the last time you drank water? Take a drink of water right now. Take a
right
deep breath.
Okay, now. I would.
I'm casually just getting through a 1.5 liter bottle right now. Just getting down there.
Yeah. It's going well. I'm only having 1 liter, but still. And
I just spilled water on myself, so.
That doesn't work.
That
you have
counts.
To drink it.
No, it counts. It counts anyway.
I will absorb the water. I will become the water.
Oh.
So anyway.
So back to proper topics.
I'd like to dump some water on David Yates, am I right?
Ooh. Next threat, for Megan. Burn. Go to Warner Brothers and dump them in water.
Yeah. That's called waterboarding, and we don't condone that.
No, just like we don't condone sending anthrax to people.
Do not condone that. To make it perfectly clear. We're
definitely on a list now.
Just like how we haven't even gotten the main discussion. We've already
shout out to the FBI agent who's been assigned to listen to our podcast.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Oh my god. The most. Oh, hey, MI5. We cover all bases. Bases.
Yeah.
NSA
007.
Yeah. Whatever secret organization, or not secret organization, but like secret person, is listening. Hi. Thank you for listening. You can donate to us.
You can deposit some Patreon
and join the common room, and then you get even more of our secrets.
All right, so now it's time for main discussion, and I decided because some idiot put me in charge of it, and I am feeling incredibly pessimistic lately, that we would sort of talk a little bit about, well, we're putting in context, I suppose, the sort of explicit comments that David Yates has made, because recently there was an article on MuggleNet that's actually been getting quite a lot of traffic. It's already got over 44 comments, and it's called In Joe We Trust. Or not. And it's by a guy called HPBoy13, also known as Irvin, apparently. And apparently he's from New York, but, you know, we don't know anything more about him except that he seems to just have a bit of a fandom presence. But essentially he's just saying that really since the eighth movie, the fandom is sort of slowly losing trust in J.K. Rowling because, you know, Casual Vacancy came out and people generally thought that was quite bad. But then, you know, after that, Cursed Child came out and people thought it was really bad. And then, you know, Fantastic Beasts and so on's going on with Johnny Depp. And then the very recent comments about LGBTQIA+ issues is all sort of adding onto this train. And then J.K. Rowling's Twitter. Oh, and of course, the cultural appropriation of Native American people, which is found on Pottermore, if you'd like to check it out. It's not taken
everyone's
down.
Everyone's favorite website.
Absolutely. I think that's still my most commented article, which is like, is Pottermore just another fan site now? Everyone relates because it's a bit bad. Anyway, so yeah.
Do you get a lot of backlash on that? Like, are there people that are like, defending Pottermore still?
Well, no.
Okay. Just curious. Like, I know that a lot of what you just said, like, people will argue with, but I wasn't sure if Pottermore being bad was one of them.
Genuinely, for that Pottermore article, like, because I usually, for writing for MuggleNet, I usually try to write things that are a bit incendiary so I can get the comments going. But honestly, with that article, it was like everyone being just like, yes, this is terrible. So, yeah, I think it got a crazy amount of comments. I can't remember how many now. But, But essentially what sort of happened was that there's this sort of golden era of J.K. Rowling. Everyone just absolutely believes basically everything she says, and that she's absolutely, you know, beacon of just sort of perfection in terms of sort of morality, politics, everything. And then it's sort of been slowly eroding. And, you know, from what I just said, then sort of brings us to the last few months where it's really started. Sort of the trust in Joe, this is HP Boy 13's words, but the trust in Joe's collided with current politics in a really bad way. Johnny Depp, in an uninspired bit of casting, became one of the leads of the Fantastic Beasts franchise, just as he was tarred by the brush of the Me Too and the Hollywood sexual abuse scandal. And then the Potter generation, in addition to its usual penchant for social justice, fermented in part by the Potter books themselves, was completely on edge after a year of Donald Trump, and right or wrong, Depp was presumed guilty until proven innocent, and the Potter franchise went on the PR defensive. And then that's when we had J.K. Rowling coming out with, based on our understanding of the circumstances, the filmmakers and I are not only comfortable sticking with our original casting, but genuinely happy to have Johnny playing a major character in the movies. Didn't go down well. I don't know. Do you know what episode it was that we really discussed that? I think it was a bit
further back. It was just before Christmas.
Yeah, if you want to check that one out. But yeah, and then we could obviously...
And then overall, like, even the hosts are pretty polarized on that issue. Like, absolutely. There are some that are very against that casting, and there are some that mm-hmm. say, you know what, it's not a big deal, let's move past it, he hasn't been convicted of anything. So, I mean, not only is it, like, a big issue in the fandom, but, like, even those of us on the podcast, we don't have, like, an umbrella stance on it, because there's just so many different opinions, even within our group.
But the main thing about that is that it really has split public opinion. You know, she's no longer, right. like, there's no longer, you know, anything you say, anything you do is perfect. I think that's also what's quite interesting, I think, with the Johnny Depp thing, is that people... if they don't like Johnny Depp or they don't like that casting, they will still try and absolve J.K. Rowling of any responsibility by saying, you know, she doesn't have control over that. That's fine kind of thing. Because mm-hmm. they still want to believe that she's still the same sort of J.K. Rowling we knew from that golden age where she couldn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's quite interesting, I think, how the fandom's sort of been evolving with this sort of recent stuff. And then we had the cultural appropriation the Native American, I guess, culture or people.
Yeah.
I don't really want to talk about that too much because I just don't know enough. So I will stop it up.
Yeah, none of us are Native American.
But, you know, that wasn't really cool. And, I mean, I think to feed into that, I was always really, really irritated with the sort of naming she's given to all the other wizarding schools, like Castelo Bruxo, Maho Tokoro. Like, they're all incredibly pedestrian. There's a fantastic article about it on MuggleNet, if you want to check it out, by Felicia. And you can just check out her name, Felicia Grady, it should come up, about just how pedestrian they are. Like, Maho Tokoro means magic place. So, and this is like, this is from the country that gave us haiku poetry. So, you know, I mean, she could have just spoken to her translators for like 10 seconds and come out with something better. So it's sort of this sort of, with Harry Potter, what was so great about it, personally, I think, was this sort of quality and this like, just incredible research. She researched so, you know, in depth for like 17 years and famously did so. And, you know, famously you can reread and reread the books and there's going to still be more and more depth. But then when we're starting to come into this stuff now in this sort of second era of Potter, as it were, you can tell that the depth is not there. It's shallow. You know, this cultural appropriation is shallow. This the Johnny Depp casting is shallow. The recent LGBT mess is shallow. You know, you don't get the cursed child is shallow. You know, this whole like with J.K. Rowling, you know, she could have with the cursed child thing. There's that whole queer baiting issue with between Scorpius and Albus. If she'd wanted to take out the sort of no homo thing, she could have. You know, but
well,
she said
she
it's
didn't
she write said it's
canon. Cursed child. Mm. I know this is like a good example of me trying to absolve her of responsibility for these things.
I know.
But I do think it's important to note that she did not write Cursed Child.
I know, and I appreciate it. But she said it was canon, which means that she's taken responsibility for everything that is in Cursed Child, and she's taken responsibility for the queer baiting within Cursed Child. So you can't have it both ways. It's either
sidebar,
canon or it's not.
If you want to learn more about queer baiting, you should watch our live stream.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely do. Definitely do.
I think a lot of... Sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, because I didn't know what it mean. I didn't really have a good understanding of what queer baiting meant before everybody explained it to me on the live stream. So just a pro tip.
I mean, it's essentially getting the LGBTQIA plus community to... watch or I guess take part in any type of content hoping that, you know, the characters that look like they're gay will actually get together, and then they never do, but there's hope. So really famous ones are like Teen Wolf, Supernatural,
stuff
like
that. About Supernatural.
Yeah, that's a huge one, and you can kind of tell, you like look on the fan fiction websites and it's, oh my god, like the Derek and what's the other guy's name? No, not Derek. Dean and Castiel, those two.
Derek is Teen Wolf. Derek and Styles.
Sorry, I get them mixed up. But yeah, like that's the thing. They're huge in fan fiction because there's so much queer baiting and it's just kind of like gone off. I'm not sure. Like, I don't know. That's my personal theory, that you can sort of see when there's a spike in fan fiction between a slash pairing, there might be a bit of queer baiting going on, but you know. That's untested, so that might be.
would you say the same for Draco and Harry? Gus has a lot out of there.
I was thinking about that. Yeah, because when I thought that, I was like, oh, yeah, well, Draco and Harry. And it's, like, quite interesting because once you sort of switch your mindset around and you start reading Harry Potter from that perspective, it starts being like, there are a lot of Draco and Harry moments. Harry is very invested in Draco, like,
yeah.
And
yeah.
where he is at all times and stuff.
Yeah, like, I mean, oh, that also is, like,
Blood Prince.
I'm re-listening to the series, and I've just been through Chamber of Secrets, and, you know, like, in the first, I think, three books, Rowling did the whole, in the first couple of chapters, she's still, like, introducing people, like, she's like, yeah, she's still explaining, yeah, and then she's like, and there was, like, Draco Malfoy, Harry's arch enemy, and I was like, what 12-year-old has an arch enemy? That's not normal.
The man who tried to murder me as a baby. It's that other boy in my class.
Yeah, so that's just dramatic in itself.
Yeah. I always assume, like, arch enemy is like lesser to enemy, right? So it's like he's got his proper enemy and his like secondary enemy because he's got that much. Like he just needs that many people against him.
Yeah.
Is it? No, I can't tell. Is it secondary to enemy? I don't actually know.
I always thought arch enemy was like,
yeah,
like the ultimate enemy.
Yeah, that's how I understand it as well. So
that's hilarious.
Maybe in Australia it has a different meaning.
No. I think that's just because I assumed he had to be secondary.
Here is the dictionary definition according to Google. There's two definitions. Number one, of arch enemy, a person who is extremely hostile or opposed to someone or something. Okay. Number two, the devil.
What's
it myself? As in the arch enemy. The one and only. It's the devil. And then there was Draco Malfoy, who's basically the devil.
Yeah, because Voldemort's really not that bad, apparently.
Yeah.
I mean,
Voldemort, who's he?
Admittedly, in like Chamber of Secrets, Voldemort's not really in the picture, so.
Yeah, and Prisoner of Azkaban is not.
So.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever.
But, still, like, you know,
he's a
Harry.
Minor character. Come on, guys. Like.
Harry's invested in Draco because he's his arch enemy, which is weird in its own way.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So, anyway.
Anyway.
I was going to say, I think a lot of these problems are coming up partially because there was no Twitter when the Harry Potter books were coming out.
Yes.
So the only way she communicated to us was like through her website, and that was all like fun things. Like it wasn't directly responding to people, and it wasn't like a response to every news thing that came out in relation to her. Because there weren't like news things coming out all the time in relation to her or her series. And the other thing is that a lot of the stuff that she's writing or approving that's coming out now doesn't have to do. It's that old, like, write what you know. And Harry Potter was she wrote what she knew. And that's not necessarily good writing advice, write what you know. But now she's writing stuff that's not just about, like, cishet white people in England. I mean, you can interpret the characters of Harry Potter however you want. They don't necessarily have to be cishet white people. But as she is one, that's probably what she was thinking of. And now it's like she's trying to write about America and like on Pottermore, Native American culture and briefly about, you know, all of these other foreign schools and gay people and stuff. And it's like, now she's getting into stuff that she does not know as much about. So even though we know she did a lot of research for Harry Potter, it's like she was still researching stuff that was relatively familiar to her.
I also think that we, I don't know, you mentioned it, we need to actually define what Rowling, like how much control Rowling has still over the franchise. Because one, like back when it was just the books, she really was the only one that were like in total control. Now,
yeah, she
really is not anymore.
That, why would you think that? Because the thing is, she's the person who's writing the screenplays. She can do whatever she wants. And she has, she could do anything and she would make huge amounts more money. Like, what would Warner Brothers actually do if she said, I want a flashback scene of Dumbledore and Grindelwald. Say, like, this is the old, like, the, you know, like, something sort of crazy that they would never say yes to.
I mean,
they would be like, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah,
I don't agree. I don't think she has full control over
and
all
then,
of this.
And then, but, the, like, if she cared about it, she could take it to Twitter. Like, she has enough money to withstand a lawsuit.
Yeah,
but- yes, I think... It's difficult, like, so we know that the Fantastic Beasts movies were not, like, the idea of we're going to make a movie about Fantastic Beasts was Warner Brothers' idea, and then J.K. Rowling was like, well, let me write the screenplay, and they were like, okay. So she writes the screenplay, and I think she pretty much has control over that. I don't know that they're necessarily going, like, well, you can't have this scene in... maybe a little bit, but, like, I don't know what she would necessarily be writing that they're like, you can't have that. But also, like, once the screenplay is done and, you know, it goes through the filming process and it goes through, you know, direction and then it goes through editing, like, stuff is taken out. So ultimately, like, she's not in control of what's on the screen. At the end.
Yeah.
And I also, I mean...
But...
It's not accurate to say that, like, a big studio like WB wouldn't have control over what goes into the screenplay. Like,
it's not that they wouldn't, yeah. But it's that she could absolutely, if she cared enough, she could yeah. absolutely take it to Twitter. She could take it public and say, this is what they're doing. Like,
I don't know if yeah, she could, like, because she signed the rights to her stories away to WB
yeah.
a long time ago, not knowing that they were going to,
yeah.
you know, end up here.
But if she they take her on, she's like, she's their golden goose. Like, they would
yeah,
be,
that's it.
It's not, like, it's not worth it for them, especially for something as simple as, say, a flashback scene. And, I mean, I'm just using yeah. that as an example. But I really think, you know, it like it would have to be something completely insane for Warner Brothers to be like, no.
I don't know.
And what
I mean,
I'm thinking
Warner
is
Brothers,
like, Warner Brothers can't fire J.K. Rowling.
But like, they could. It, like, Joe does not.
I mean, they,
she
they
does not own Harry
could.
Potter anymore. Warner Brothers owns
yeah,
Harry
yeah.
Potter.
No, they technically could, but that would look so bad that they wouldn't, unless
yeah.
like there was a huge disagreement.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't do that because they know that they would lose a lot of fans. Even with J.K. Rowling falling out of favor with so many people, there are still, I would probably say most fans are still like behind J.K. Rowling 100% because not everyone is as intensive as we are. But all of those people would then be like, how dare you fire J.K. Rowling?
Right.
And turn against Warner Brothers. It's way easier to turn against a corporation than to turn against a person.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
sure.
true. I just don't think it's as simple as saying, like, well, she could do this if she really cared enough, because I think that the contract that they have is probably way over our heads. And
no,
I
think,
know.
But that's the point, is that if she cared enough. So that's the thing. The caring has to be that's your gauge. So if she, you know, I mean, but the other thing is, and I think what I should add here is that you can tell when she's writing about these sort of, you know, these areas of Harry Potter that haven't been gone into yet, you know, the Native American writing on Pottermore mm-hmm. and like the foreign wizarding schools is that she's not putting in the research. And that's what makes me think
yeah.
that J.K. Rowling is actually, she has no interest. She's not going to fight for stuff like this.
Mm. Well, and then here's something is, like, I don't think J.K. Rowling really has control over, like, Johnny Depp being in the movies. Like, I think if, I think she could be like, oh, I'd, like, I don't think this necessarily happened. But I think she could say, like, well, I don't like him being in the movies. And Warner Brothers would be like, well, too bad, we cast him. But I think she has control over what she says about it.
Yeah, she tweeted about it, and that's what's
yeah, exactly.
interesting, is that it shows that it's like she's not actually against it.
Yeah, exactly.
She
so
could
like,
have she could have not said anything. That
yeah.
would have been fine, but she did, and that's, I don't know, I find
and
that
even
interesting.
If you think that, like, people, and I think this is probably true to a point that, like, there are people who help her write statements like that.
Mm-hmm.
WB has a hand in statements like that. But,
of
like,
course.
I think she could have refused to give a statement. Like, she could have refused to say anything about it, but she didn't, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just kind of, I'm trying to figure out, and I have no frame of reference for this, but, like, you know, I've looked into, like, music industry type stuff before, and, like, mm-hmm. spoiler alert, if your favorite music artist is tweeting something, it's probably not them. It's probably one mm-hmm. of six people on their team, and they've been told what to say because record deals are, like, so insane. And I don't know how much this is like that, where, like, she has people who own her brand controlling what she says, and how much of it is, like, her genuinely taking the time to say something because she feels she should, even though she shouldn't. Like, I don't know.
I wonder about that. Yeah, but I do think that you can tell. I'm not, it's difficult to tell the Twitter, but I think you can tell that, especially at least half of her tweets are genuine, just because they're kind of random, you know, like they're not thought through enough to be a PR team, I don't think.
Yeah. It's only the stuff when she when she, you know, said stuff about Johnny Depp, where I think, like, someone probably had a hand in that. But I think, like, I mean, obviously she still, like, approved it. Like,
That's the thing, is that she has written on that, "I'm genuinely happy to have him playing this."
You know? Yeah.
And that's where it's like, she didn't have to say genuinely happy, you know? So, like, that's when you know, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting discussion. Like, I am genuinely interested in knowing how much power she has.
Yeah. And, like, even if she didn't write that, that is the official party line. Like, you know, if you're supporting her and her work, then you're supporting that sentiment as well.
Mm.
Whether or not she was the one that came up with it.
But that's the other thing, and this is what I want to add to this discussion. So according to this article by HPBoy13, I think is his name. He thinks that when J.K. Rowling announced that there was going to be 5 movies and not 3, no one actually knew at that time.
And which is not true.
She just announced it. Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, But, I mean, it would be interesting if it was.
That would be crazy.
It's interesting
WB had to know.
The actors claimed not to know. Yeah. Sorry.
I think they genuinely didn't, because they were signed on for 3 movies. But, you know, there was the whole live event where the two Davids were like, "Oh, we have a special guest. Like, should we, like, put her on stage or should we not?" And they were, like, building up the thing. And then it was like, "Hey, Joe's here." And everyone was, like, going crazy. And Joe was like, "Well, hello. So this is my first screenplay. Turns out it's not going to be 3 because I'm writing too much. So it's going to be 5. And there's no way that, like, WB didn't know. There's no way that the two Davids didn't know. There might be, like because the actors were like,
at the very least, David Heyman knew.
Yeah. People knew. I think the actors might have just found out the same way because they were, like, really shocked. I mean, I suppose they're good actors, but they're really genuinely shocked. So I think they might have actually found out on that day, as just everyone else did, but no way did Warner Brothers did not know.
You can't walk out. You don't walk out, like, in public and be like, "I'm making 5 movies with Warner Brothers." And Warner Brothers is like, "That sounds legit. Sure." Like,
right. Like, that had to have been an approved decision.
Yeah.
Like, if that was the case, man, I have so many movie deals. I mean, I know she's J.K. Rowling, but, like,
Warner Brothers is fronting the money for just a lot of film ideas that I have. Yeah. And this is me announcing that to them.
So, yeah, no, there's going to be 5 Fantastic Beasts, 3 Quidditch Through the Ages, 3 Beetle the Bards. I've got another couple coming up with them, or 4 Cuckoos Calling. Like.
And then by that point, we'll probably be ready to remake the Harry Potter movies.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
But then we do a Netflix TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Please. That's what I want so badly.
Oh, yes, Netflix. Oh, my God.
But, yeah, it would be so easy for Warner Brothers to have been like, "Okay, everybody chill for, like, a few days." And then they're like, "You know what? Like, we know she said they were going to be 5, but, like, that's, we're not sure yet. You know, it's going to be 3, guys."
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Joe would tweet and be like, "Whoops, looks like I was a little hasty in saying that.
LOL." Hello,
I mean, I can buy that the actors didn't know all of it because, you know, Colin Farrell was like, there's more than one movie? And people were like, well, yeah duh, three. But he was obviously only signed for one. And I remember that being like a live interview and he was like, oh, wait, I'm just going to like send a message to my agents. Like, why do I only have like one movie contract? We know now why, but so I could see that like the actors didn't know because it was probably just,
the actors didn't know.
I don't know, decided on like a couple of days prior and maybe they just had not the time to tell or
that
finalize
was, like,
contracts.
The only reason she came out. I mean, she came out because she's J.K. Rowling, but then it was to announce there's going to be 5 movies. Like,
exactly. That was all
she
said.
They weren't just going to have her come out and say nothing. Like,
yeah. And the world went crazy.
So, I mean, essentially what happened was David Yates said to Entertainment Weekly that there wouldn't be anything explicit about Dumbledore's relationship or, I guess, feelings towards Grindelwald and, you know, obviously his sexual orientation. And then J.K. Rowling sort of did this tweet on the 31st of January that was said, she said, being sent abuse about an interview that didn't involve me, about a screenplay I wrote, but which none of the angry people have read, which is part of a 5-movie series that's only one installment in, is obviously tons of fun, but you know what's even more fun? And then she put in a gif of a, someone being like mute. And a lot of people were pretty upset about that. There were a lot of tweets being like,
yeah,
LGBT people are not
with
happy
that. And here's my thing with a lot of like J.K. Rowling's responses that are like this. It's like, I totally see where she's coming from because like, I would hate to be sent stuff about something that David Yates said. Like, who wouldn't? And also it is like, okay, people haven't seen the movie. And I also get that, like, she can't just say, like, this is what's going to happen in the movie. But her responses are always, these kinds of responses are not, like, with the help of a PR team.
No.
These are, she's just tweeting and she's bitter. And it's like, I get it. I get being bitter. Like, feel bitter all the time. But.
See, I just find
back,
them fun.
Like, you gotta hold back. You gotta not tweet. Like, David Yates' whole problem is that he speaks. So
and he
let's
doesn't
learn
have a Twitter.
Him. Yeah, he doesn't even have a Twitter. Can you imagine if David Yates had a Twitter?
God. Oh, dear.
That's the nightmare scenario.
someone should create a fake David Yates Twitter account.
Oh, Jesus. That would give us a lot of discussion material, I think.
Oh, boy. But the thing is about this tweet, right, is that first off, like, I don't think anyone here condones anyone abusing anyone over Twitter. But what immediately happened was that people immediately went, we know exactly what this abuse is that you're talking about, and we don't really think it's abuse. We think it's people being angry that you're basically taking credit for writing an LGBTQIA plus character, but actually you're not actually going to give us any explicit representation in any type of media you produce, which is not cool. So, like, people are sort of saying, you know, I think this guy saying who's called Taylor Driggers was like, oh, yeah, wanting to see someone like you represented in a nominally inclusive fantasy universe and then being told, here, it's this character whose sexuality is never addressed in the text and which we're not about to start addressing now. It's like, that's the kind of, that's what it's getting down to. It's like, she's built this brand, which is based in sort of the values she's permeated Harry Potter with, this sort of inclusiveness and tolerance and whatever. And yet these kind of statements and these actions come across, certainly to the LGBT community, as just ultimately, like, just ultimately it's hypocrisy. It's just like saying, no, you don't get to have credit for something that you didn't do.
Yeah.
See, I'm still kind of, I suppose it's more hoping than knowing, but that it will come up in a later movie. No, it's just not going to come up in the second one, because how much of Dumbledore are we actually going to see in the second one? I don't think it's going
to
be like
super much. Well, it all goes
back
to, like, we don't know what not explicitly means. Like,
right.
Yeah.
We could very well see something about him that indicates his sexuality that you know, David Yates doesn't think is explicit because he's not running down the street wearing rainbow suspenders and throwing glitter in the air. So
when I first read it, I read it as, he's not going to say, like, I'm gay, but we all know he is.
Because he'll pick up a book about knitting patterns. I know what implicit gay signaling is, and it's not good enough. It is not good enough.
I could actually see that he would be like, in the fourth or fifth movie, he would be like, so, Nude, I didn't tell, like, people don't know this, but, like, we have a great relationship, whatever. I'm going to tell you now, like, I once had a thing for Gellert Grindelwald, I kind of fell for him, but no, like, I didn't see that he was obviously just bad guy. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel bad for him. And obviously, like, that cost me my sister and the, like, last member of my family hates me. And, like, he could more be like that. Because obviously there was no relationship. They were not together. There was nothing. He was just in love with a guy who did not.
That brings me to, like, how I'm, like, conflicted about it is, like, yes, like, the representation is important, obviously, but the representation is a gay man who fell in love with his friend who did not reciprocate his feelings and went on to become a terrorist, and Dumbledore never loved again. And it's, like, that's not, like, great representation. And also, I always struggle with this with representation, is I'm like, even before this, I didn't trust, like, J.K. Rowling and David Yates to write and direct a gay movie because they're not gay and they're not, like, straight people that have shown me, like, oh, we get it. Like, regardless of whatever my personal feelings have been about them, I was like, I just don't trust them to do it. And so I'm like, it's a hard thing. It's a hard thing for all representation.
But it's one of those things where you research it, you'll be fine. If she bothered to research Native American culture, she would have been fine. She bothered to research anything, she'd be fine.
Even people who do research aren't necessarily going to do it right.
Yeah. Look at her, like,
mind. Sure, but the other thing is about this is that, you know, like, it doesn't need to be bleedingly obvious. It can be, like, think it can be something, and I think it's sort of come across a lot before, sort of like, oh, but these movies aren't actually about Dumbledore, and they're not about Dumbledore and Grindelwald's relationship. You're like, absolutely, it's not. All I want is, like, a line from Queenie at some point being like, oh, yeah, you loved him. Something like that. I do not want anything more than that. Frankly, I think J.K. Rowling writes romance horribly, but that's just personally. But, like, you know, just a line or something like that is perfectly fine. That's enough. That signals it, and that's all you need. And that's explicit. That's fine. You don't need a flashback. You don't need, you know, an hour's worth of, you know, gay Dumbledore. Just, you know, a 5-second line is more than enough for me.
Well, and what would be more important to me is if there was a positive queer relationship in the movies.
Yes.
Because Dumbledore and Grindelwald is not a positive queer relationship. Yes. Like, Dumbledore is a positive character, I think. But, like, if Credence, for example, was queer, because he should be, and he had a relationship with a man, like, that's not Grindelwald, because that's terrible.
I wonder if that would be
all the queer characters falling for the same guy.
I feel like with Credence, there's, like, that whole weird element with Graves, which was, like, bordering on pedophilic. And I was kind of like, even if he does end up being gay representation later on, I don't think it's going to be healthy. Like,
yeah.
See, the thing is,
like, he just needs to get a nice boyfriend, and I'll be a little bit happier.
See, that's, like, my main point. Like, what I'm more, I don't know, not comfortable with is, like, J.K. Rowling being like, so the Wizarding World is, like, really open about, like, queer people.
Yeah.
And there's only one character in a universe that has, like, easily over 100 characters in 7 books that we know that is queer. Like, how is that possible? Like, that is what really is not correct for me. Like, how do we only get heteronormative couples. That should be addressed. You know, like, it's easier to hide that in a movie franchise where we're probably not ever going to see as many characters, but we have 7 books of a ton of characters.
But that's the thing, the fandom starts filling in those cracks, you know, like even, what's his name? That, the wonderful, wonderful person who plays Seamus Finnegan. I'm the worst person in the universe.
Devin Murray.
Devin Murray, of course. Like, even Devin Murray, like, ships Dean and Seamus. And, like, there's all that stuff about bisexual Percy, gay Charlie. Like, you know, I think that's the thing. I think the fandom has sort of almost filled in the cracks in terms of canon. And, like, when Harry Potter was written, you know, it was the 90s. It's sort of, there were, you know, it was, people hadn't quite woken up enough.
And it was a series that was largely from Harry's perspective, and he wasn't the most, like, educated person on a lot of these topics.
Or just plain observant. You don't even have to say educated.
Yeah. I mean, that like, Dumbledore is gay, she officially said outside of the books. Like, yes, you can read it in the subtext, if you're not completely moron, I suppose, but, I mean, that's not something that she confirmed in the book series. Like, she said that
because
afterwards.
Because Harry doesn't even bother to think about it.
Yeah. She could easily be like, yeah, Dean and Seamus became a couple. Like, she could have said that outside of the books.
Yeah, that's true.
And she didn't. Like, she's like, there's only one queer character in Dumbledore, and it's not even, like, a real, like, there's nothing really to talk about. Like, he had a fling for a terrible guy for one summer, which is probably, like, summer in Britain is, like, 4 days. I'm kidding. I mean... You know what I mean? It's not like super
now
long.
I'm going to reread Deathly Hallows and be like, all of this happened over the course of 4 days.
Didn't she actually deny Wolfstar at some point?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear.
That was the whole thing.
She also said that Charlie's asexual. Like, she does, like, a lot of those couples that have shipped in fan fiction that are, like, not in
But
canon.
Charlie is asexual.
Yes.
For dragons. If he was. Or can you be Draco sexual, I guess? I suppose that's how it was. I mean, you go back to Latin roots, right? That's how it works. Oh, JK Rowling. Just.
So, yeah, I mean, on the live stream, we talked a little bit about how we are really prone to, like, find any way we can to defend her because we just still want to believe the best in her. And I think Craig was talking a little bit about how, like, generally, he tries not to put celebrities or people he admires on, like, a pedestal, which is a dangerous thing to do, but that J.K. Rowling has always kind of been the exception to that, and I think that rings true for a lot of fans, and so it's actually really hard to come to terms with the fact that she is human and she Fs up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is one of those instances or not. Like I said, I in the particular case of the not explicit situation, I feel like we should probably see the movie first and then have a lot more conversations about it, but
yeah, the whole not explicitly thing was honestly not as upsetting to me as, like, the Johnny Depp stuff. Like,
yeah,
oh, I don't think it was that upsetting, but I think it was, for me, it was kind of like, okay, this is, like, the last
it was another thing.
Like, this is a nail in the coffin. It's like the very last thing is like, oh, for Christ's sake, you know, like, this is, I mean, it's just because she could have addressed it on Twitter in a way that did involve the LGBT community, and she didn't. You know, she could have just been like, I get it. I understand your concerns. It's okay. You know, or something like.
Yeah.
But she didn't.
She could
just
have literally said, like, I cannot reveal what's going to happen in the next movie or future movies, but I understand your concerns. Like, something like that.
That's it. That's all she had to say. She didn't even have to confirm anything, but just be nice. But instead, she's like, I'm being sent abuse, and I am giving you this gift of something that I probably don't even understand what it is. And you're just like, don't do that.
Can I talk about the Lightning Thief musical? The Lightning Thief musical tweeted at J.K. Rowling, we really don't recommend changing important things about book characters for the movies. Just saying. Which is hilarious to me. The Percy Jackson movies are, of course, terrible. Yeah. And fans flipped out because Annabeth was not blonde. Oh, and that is what the Lightning Thief musical is referencing. The Lightning Thief musical is like, hey, our movies, the character wasn't blonde. And they hated us.
Oh my god.
And then she says, "Lucky, I have no intention of doing it then. Owen, believing every bit of Potter clickbait. Foolish, just saying." Which again, you could have just left it at "I have no intention of changing
it." It was a quote from your director. Go away!
I do feel like they took one interview that David Yates gave months ago and tried to pull out every bit of controversy that they could.
Yeah, but that's media. Like, he shouldn't have said it then.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he's not, you know, well-versed in PR.
Apparently he isn't.
But he didn't say no. He said not explicitly, which I think is up for interpretation a little bit.
Yeah. Like, I don't think how it's up for interpretation.
I don't think that
not explicit is queer baiting. That's what that is. It's like, don't worry, guys. It's if you really want to see it in there, then you know you'll see it. But for everyone else who doesn't want to see it, they won't. So it's fine. Yeah.
It's queer baiting if there is nothing in the next four films that ever leads to anything.
I will be genuinely. I will be amazed if there is. I will be so happy. But I will be amazed. I don't think there will be. I think this well and truly confirms it to me. It's like, no, you could have taken this opportunity to address this and you didn't, and your silence speaks volumes.
I think that there will be a line like Queenie saying you loved him, or someone saying you loved him, or he'll say I loved him. Like, I think that, yeah. And then the rest will be subjects like the book. But we'll see.
We'll see.
Do we have any other J.K. Rowling grievances to air at the moment?
Our great lack of faith in David Yates came out before.
Next episode is my David Yates grievances.
Okay.
Oh boy. I don't know if I want to be on that episode.
Cool. So, you guys ready to go into the nude case?
Let's do it. I love the nude case. Love all these fuzzy little animals.
Yeah, especially if they're cute. Yeah. Mostly they're not. So, are you all down here with me? Climb down faster, climb down faster.
Sure am.
Here we are.
Woo. So, today I'm going to show you dum dum da. A piece called either the Muttergore or Mandagore, which is great in itself that it has two names. and it is a very, there's very little information on him. And what we have is pretty vague, but I still found him pretty cool. So it is, according to oral traditions of southern France, a spirit under the form of an animal. But they don't really know what kind of animal. Like, mostly it's a black cat, but it could also be a rat, fox, dog, or cow. Which is weird, because, you know, like, I can see a cat and I suppose foxes and dog kind of look similar, but a rat and a cow?
I think there's a thing in, isn't it Irish folklore? And it's like a white cow could be a bad omen? I think there's something like that. Like, it's around. Mm. I don't know, cow. Look, just animals are evil. It's
So, the point of the Muttergore is they're, like, generally regarded to be evil. But sometimes they're also seen as the magician cat, so they could bring you wealth and luck. And in that case, there's some pretty weird stuff that you have to do. If you want to get a Muttergore into your house, you have to lure it with a fresh plump chicken and then carry it home by its as the new owner without the human once looking back. And if the cat is giving the first mouthful of food and drink at every meal, it will repay its owner with a solid gold coin each morning.
Oh,
that's rather specific. And now I'm picturing, like, people in southern France just, like, generally picking up random black cats and feeding them. You're like, here, where's my gold coin? It really all comes down to, like, be nice to the animal and it will be, like, pay you off in some form.
That doesn't sound very evil. That just sounds like it's doing its job. It's like,
yeah.
Oh. You just can't please people.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the thing is, I didn't find anything on what evil things it would do if you were not nice to it. So I think it's just really vague. But it also found that in Gasconi traditions, you must not keep the metagirl all your life long. However, if the owner is dying, he will suffer a long agony as long as he doesn't free the metagirl. So
does that mean that when you feed it, it's under contract?
Yeah, basically.
So you feed it, you get a gold coin, but if you're dying, don't feed it, and then you'll be okay?
I don't know how you free it.
Neither do I. I'm just asking.
But I mean, suppose. I'm still trying to,
you're only supposed to keep it for a little bit. You're not supposed to keep it for your whole life, so you should, like, spread the wealth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm still trying to see.
This is like the wizard with the hopping pot, except like cat style, right? And then you got to pass it around and be nice. And if you don't, then, you know, the pot's going to ruin your life. I get it.
It could also be a cow or a rat, though.
Yeah, sorry, cat, cow, rat, or fox.
Oh my God.
Could ruin your life.
So generally, like, animals that you find in main Europe, don't trust them. And I also found two pop culture reference. The one I'm not really familiar with, but I'm just going to read it out. I don't know if you guys know this one. It's Kelly Armstrong's Canesville series. You guys know that one?
Mm-mm. Okay. Sorry.
So I thought it was maybe popular and I just missed out, but okay then. So the protagonist, Olivia, is adopted by an unusually intelligent black stray. She dubs the cat, or TC. Like, what a great name for a cat. Listeners, so if you're creative. Still looking for names for your animal, this is how you do it.
Dog.
The dog, TD.
My dad always regrets not naming a dog D-O-G.
Because that's such a good dad joke.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently this TC character is dressed respectfully in person to cat as a matagal by village elder Veronica in private, and at points demonstrates supernatural powers such as the ability to project an image of himself across town when he needs somebody to come to his aid. Which is a bit of a weird superpower. So I don't know if that makes me want to read this Canesville series, but apparently it's out there. And then there's another one that's a lot more popular, and that's the French fairy tale cat, also known as the Master Cat or Puss in Boots, which, you know, there's this whole DreamWorks film from 2011, and he's in the Shrek series and everything. However, in Shrek, he's a ginger cat and not a black cat. So that should be noted.
Shrek and being inaccurate again.
So, yeah, the Puss in Boots is also considered to be a matagal. I suppose not the Shrek version, but...
Why not? Don't ruin the dream.
I don't know. I mean, I've not really followed those films. I've seen like two Shrek films, I think. But isn't he like an Italian cat or something? Isn't he like very ridiculous?
He's played by Antonio Banderas.
Yeah. So Spanish. Right?
Okay. But yeah, no, Shrek 2 was a fantastic film. Particularly
fantastic.
Uh-huh.
You could say in a way the Shrek films are the original Fantastic Beasts. Because
this is true.
I mean, Shrek. There's definitely beasts.
That's true.
And they're fantastic.
They are.
You heard it here first.
Oh, see, that's the thing.
Travels.
Isn't there a dragon too? Land.
There's a dragon.
Mm-hmm. There's a talking donkey, and that's not in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which is frankly... No.
And isn't that dragon in a relationship with that talking donkey?
Of course.
Yes. And they have babies together.
How
somehow.
Do their babies look like? What? How?
They're little...
I mean...
Drackling.
We're going to have a maledictus, maybe we'll find out. Okay. In Fantastic Beasts.
In a way, Shrek is more...
Is more Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, the Fantastic Beasts probably have more of a personality in Shrek than in the actual Fantastic Beasts movies.
I'm going to tweet at J.K. Rowling.
I mean, she's probably going to block you. Might get blocked. So, the moral of this week's Newt Gaze is be nice to animals.
I did just send a tweet.
What did you say?
Oh, I said, at J.K. Rowling, why are the beasts in the Shrek franchise more fantastic than the beasts in Fantastic Beasts?
Oh, no.
I tagged all of you guys.
Oh, no.
So we're all going to be blocked?
I don't want to be blocked. This isn't fair.
We need to make this new fake account, David Yates, so we're still friends with J.K. Rowling, though.
Oh, God.
She blocks me and I just remake my Twitter as David Yates.
Oh, we're all
I'm sorry, J.K. Rowling, don't block me. Not that
well,
sorry, but...
in conclusion, this week's podcast question is... how much power do you think J.K. Rowling has over the Fantastic Beasts franchise? We would love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. Support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie. You should definitely do that and join our common room because it's awesome.
We're fun people.
The greatest. And also I mentioned, yeah.
We're definitely not full of ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, you get to be in the chat with us.
I speak only the absolute truth, okay?
Everything I say on this show is true once I say it. That's how it works. I've already established, so. There's also a fandom chat Facebook group where we, not necessarily just us, but MuggleNet people discuss all things Harry Potter, Fantastic Beasts, Cursed Child, etc. You can just search for Fandom Chat hosted by MuggleNet.com, and you don't need to be a patron to join that. So it's a big group, and it's a pretty cool place.
Fun times.
Yay. I'm Oriel.
I'm Eleanor.
I'm Megan.
I'm Shannon.
Case closed.
Stay hydrated.